Redacted Media and Ghosthead.net present The Film Illogical Society. On today's episode, we continue our countdown of the BBC's 100 Greatest Comedies of All Time. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Scholes and Chad Halverson.
And welcome back to another episode of The Film Illogical Society, the countdown show, where we are counting down the top 101 comedies of all time, as determined by the BBC. With me, as always for the countdown show, is Chad Hurley.
Chad, I don't know if you can hear it, but I'm karate chopping in front of my microphone.
Yep.
You can hear that?
Yep.
Sweet.
I can hear that. I can hear that. I thought that's the nickname you wanted to go with.
Oh, Chad Hurley?
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what you want to call me, Big Poppy.
Okay, yeah, I'll go with that. So today's movie is from 1963. Our second Jerry Lewis directed film, but our third film with Jerry Lewis. I think Jerry Lewis right now is basically dominating
this list. Yeah, definitely.
73 on up, Jerry Lewis. This is the third time that we've talked about him. This is the film The Nutty Professor. Where we get to get, you know, the basic story of it's a Jekyll and Hyde take, basically. And the benefit is we get to learn the meaning of the word milquetoast.
that is true. I guess I never, ever knew that milquetoast was a thing.
I thought it was a food. Like, you know, you're making, like, French toast or something. You soak the toast in...
Oh, yeah, egg wash.
Whatever,
and cinnamon.
Yeah.
Some sugar.
But, no, milk toast does not mean that at all. At all. It's actually, like, the opposite. Like if you were to give me, like, the opposite meaning of this, I would think French toast. But milk toast is a very timid, unassertive, spineless person, especially one who is easily dominated or intimidated. So, yeah, there you go. Word of the day, milquetoast.
Ah! That's the word of the day! Sorry.
No, it's okay. I pushed that. This section, let's talk about the main characters. All right. So our main character, the main protagonist in this, is played by Jerry Lewis, who also wrote and directed this film. And I think he had a strong hand in the editing as well. In an interview that I saw him with Jerry Seinfeld before he passed away, he talked about that he basically, from start to finish, he had a strong hand in all of his films. So I don't know why this would be any different. Anyway, he plays two characters. He plays Julius Kelp, the professor, who's nutty, and Buddy Love, the Jekyll and Hyde personalities.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a Jekyll and Hyde, you know, ripoff. I shouldn't say ripoff. It's just a retelling of that character dynamic.
And if you're familiar with The Simpsons and you know Professor Frick, then you know who the Nutty Professor is. It's the same. Yeah. And that was one thing I was disappointed with. I did not hear one Glavin the entire time.
I didn't either. I actually was super sad about that.
Yep. And then we have Stella Stevens, who plays the love interest as Stella Purdy. What do you think of Stella Purdy?
I thought that was a lazy name.
I agree.
Which I know they use it in the Eddie Murphy one, too, but it's like, all right. I guess I'm more disappointed in the Eddie Murphy one for not renaming it something better.
Yeah, especially since they changed the name of the main character.
Yeah.
To Clump. But
I like Stella Stevens, though. Like, I... thinks she...
Yeah.
It's... This isn't... sorry. I'm gonna... We had to stick to characters. We're sticking to characters.
We're sticking to characters. Right.
Stella Stevens... The other thing I didn't like about her character was her wishy-washy on Buddy Love. Because she obviously knew that he was a jerk. But because, you know, the man has to be sexy and assertive more than he should be. I don't know. She's forced to be with him.
Well, you know, it's a nice guys finish last type of movie. But as far as characters go, those are the main ones. Like it's Jerry Lewis's two characters that are kind of driving the narrative, and then Stella Stevens's character of being the love interest and kind of the foil to Buddy Love.
How could you forget about bodybuilder number one, Richard Kiel?
Well, we'll get into those characters later. Well,
this is the character section.
That's true. I will get in. I will say that there are. It seems that that Jerry Lewis had a little bit of a his own troupe, basically of actors, because there were a lot of the actors, same actors and actresses, that were in his previous film.
Yes.
Which I liked. I do like that. I do like that. You know, in the modern director, like a Wes Anderson film, like it's the same 10 actors in it in every single film, and I do like that. I think it's a fun thing.
Well, it's, I mean, with the Christopher Guest Waiting for Guffman, like,
oh, absolutely,
same thing, like that holds true. Yeah. I like, especially with comedy too, and you see it a lot with improv groups, or in this case they're all stage actors, but yeah, like, go with what you're comfortable with, and especially when you're writing stuff too. If you know you're going to write for your friend or somebody that you worked with over X amount of times, like, it's just easier to write that character because you know their range.
It's, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely, and you can write with them in mind, and a lot of times that's easier to do. So, any other characters besides the James Bond character? Henry Gibson. I'm sorry, Henry Gibson was in this film.
Who was Henry Gibson?
He played the... He'll be in Blues Brothers. He's the neo-Nazis, the leader of
Oh, yeah.
He's in a movie that I don't believe is on this list, but maybe should be, The Burbs.
The Burbs isn't on this list?
As the weird neighbor. I don't believe so.
This is the most egregious act. Like, I will go to war with Great Britain over this.
Okay, you heard it here. This is why it started.
This is why it's... Oh, you're right. Oh, now I'm...
I don't know Britain that well, so I don't know how much they have the Burbs. What? I don't know if that's an American thing or not. And we'll just say it is, just to keep the peace. We'll say it is. But yeah, Henry Gibson, it was interesting to see him in here.
Yeah.
Because he looks exactly the same.
Yeah, he's like one of those actors that really for like 40 years looks the same.
The hair changes color, but outside of that, he looks exactly the same. Yeah. And he plays the character of Gibson, college student. So, fun.
Breakout role.
Yeah, breakout
college
role.
Student.
I played Gibson. And your name again? Henry Gibson.
I would totally try to pick up women like that. You know, I was college student number 3 in The Nutty Professor. Well, the Eddie Murphy one? No.
Then I didn't see it. All right. So now is everyone's favorite segment. Chad breaks down the plot. All right,
I'm gonna try something new. I'm gonna try to do this. Can you pull out a timer, or do I have to pull out a timer?
I can pull out
could
a
you
timer. Pull,
could Hold you whip on. It out, big guy?
Whip it out, big guy.
Tiger style.
All right, let me find that. You want
1 minute
a stopwatch?
I want 1 minute.
Okay.
All right, you count me down and let me know.
Let me just get this set up so that it works correctly and I don't give you any extra time. All right. 3, 2, plot breakdown.
Okay, so Professor Kelp is a science teacher at a college, and he's very off-putting. He's just book smart, like what we would call a nerd. And he really likes this girl, Miss Purdy, who's a student of his. That's kind of weird, but we can get into that later.
Well, he's too milquetoast.
Oh, yeah, he's milquetoast. So he gets it in his head that he has to be, you know, like other men, you know, big, bulky, strong, whatever. He tries working out. He tries to do all the things that, you know, we frankly should all do, but we don't. And he ends up talking to a doctor friend, and the doctor's friend, hey, just take a look at all my books. There's science in there somewhere. He's like, all right. So he comes up with this formula that not only, like, makes him cool, but kind of changes his character. He turns into this guy called Buddy Love, and Buddy Love is suave, he's a musician, he's got a great voice, but he's also kind of a jerk, an alcoholic, kind of like the opposite of what Julius is. So the whole movie, he's fighting between, like, being Buddy Love and being himself, and in the end, he gets caught. Oh, yeah. He gets caught, and he ends up just saying, like, look, I did it because, you know, I wanted to try being something else, but he knew it wasn't himself, and he didn't like who he was becoming. And in the end, Miss Purdy ends up liking him for who he was anyways, which she was telling him the entire fucking time throughout the movie. He was just too stuck on Buddy Love to see that. The end. I know that wasn't a minute, but...
Hey, it was a very, very nice synopsis, though, of the plot.
Okay. You know, so let's...
That's very, very well done.
So, do you want to wade through that? Do you want to wade through that a little bit and see what we can dig up?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about this plot line. So we talked about before the Jekyll and Hyde, right? So he takes, he drinks the chemical just like Dr. Jekyll did.
Oh, can we talk about, like, how over the top, like, you can tell he's a stage actor and they're a stage group, like, on how over the top his laboratory was, the different colors and, like,
oh, yeah.
And the literal transformation the first time. Like, they pulled from, like, Bela Lugosi and, like, all that old Universal Monster stuff and, like, tried to do a transition. You know what I mean? Like, and it turned out pretty good.
Yeah, I thought... So his laboratory, if you think of the classic mad scientist laboratory with test tubes and tubes with different colored liquid running all over the place, you have Bunsen burners aplenty... That's his lab.
Real quick, sorry. The Bunsen burner. Why? It had no reason to be on in the scene where he transforms. Like, he's not even using it, and it's like a 5-foot-tall flame. And I know it's for camera and it's plays, whatever. But practically, in the scientific world, I was like, that's a waste of gas, man. Like, your college has got to be pissed with all the money you're freaking hemorrhaging out of your lab. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, so lots of chemicals, classic. The scene, the first scene where he breaks through and just how bright, like, the colors were. I just wondered, like, as he's directing that scene, how he did it. Because you're getting some different camera angles, like the camera is changing the angles, it's looking down on him more, it's coming in at weird ways, where most of the film the camera is very stationary, right? The camera isn't really a character, but in some of those transition scenes it becomes a different eye, right? Because it wants to give the sense of awe, the sense of mystery or whatever is going on, dread, that the professor is thinking.
Well, it sets up to the next scene before he goes into the club, where he's walking down the street and it's this long take of everybody shocked and looking at this whatever this thing is. We don't know yet, but the way they're reacting, we assume, and the way it's set up in that transition scene, the metamorphosis. We assume he's this hideous person, but when he walks in, it's revealed he's, you know, what Jerry Lewis looks like if you actually, you know, make him look good. And, well, and his body,
and
too.
And add a lot of grease.
Yeah, oh my God, so much grease. But not only was it, like, you know, makeup and hair and all that, but, like, when he's Kelp, he puts his head forward, his neck isn't straight, his arms go, yeah, or his shoulders are forward, but when he's Buddy Love, his chest is out, his arms are back, like, you know, he walks with swagger. So, and Jerry Lewis is that type of actor that can play, you know, not only play two characters and make them sound different and act different, but, like, he literally transformed into two different people. Like, it's totally noticeable.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, he's got a humpback. Like, everything you think of, like, a classic sign, like, his hair is crazy all over the place, glasses, buck teeth, everything. Yeah. And he does it well. And I thought, too, that, like, the physical comedy that he did in this was so much better than The Ladies' Man.
Agreed. Yeah, this is, like, way funnier.
Yeah, the there's a gag where he is sitting. So the dean calls the professor into his office because there's another explosion, and he's going to yell at him. And he has the professor sit in this chair that's by him, and he sits down, and it's like there's no bottom cushion because he sinks in completely.
Slowly.
And then he's like, oh, wait, and he gets up. He gets, like, a piece of paper and puts that on the seat, and then it's fine. It was funny. It was well done. This was I thought a much better, like you said, a much better comedy than The Ladies' Man, which felt more like a stage play, because it basically was a stage play.
Yeah, the only thing I think that came off as more of, like, a stage thing is the way they shot his classroom kind of felt lame, but again, whatever. But the metamorphosis, like, that actually felt like they built a big sound stage and pulled it back like you would be in a theater. So you could, and that's why it was more colorful and more, you know, gaudy and over the top, because it kind of had to be theatric. Because, I mean, well, Jekyll and Hyde was originally done on the stage, so it makes sense that they would try to replicate that.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's the, it's a comedy based on that, right? And,
yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about, so what else did you like about this film?
What else did I like about this film? I was going to talk about the scene with Buddy Love and the Dean, where he's trying to convince him to let him sing at the school dance.
Yes.
And he makes him do Hamlet. And, like, Buddy Love is antagonistic, and he's only really thinks about himself, but he also, you know, he wants to get this gig playing at the school because he, you know, likes Stella Purdy and all this other stuff. But anyways, he goes in there, the dean's all ready to be the dean, and I have to be the first line of defense and making sure the school isn't fun. And he comes in, and, you know, Buddy Love knows how to schmooze, and he talks the dean into, like, doing Hamlet, but he keeps, the joke is, like, he'll do to be or not to be, and then Buddy Love, every time, be like, stop, you need to get up on the desk. Okay, to be or not to be. No, stop. A sword. And he keeps just adding. And by the end of it, he's tricked the dean into letting him play because he was super nice to him, even though he really didn't get to see any of the dean do any of Hamlet of that scene, because that's like a 4 or 5 minute scene. So
you never got to it.
Yeah, so I really liked, again, going back to, because that was a little bit of physical comedy. But, like, the back and forth, because there's a lot of slow stuff, and it's a film of its era, and, you know, I'm just used to things being faster. But, like, that was cool because that joke was fast enough where it was still funny, but it wasn't super slow like other points in the movie, like him getting when the first explosion happens and the dean's secretary comes in looking for the professor, and you can hear this. And, like that whole setup I felt like was too long, but I still felt like, again, that was another good physical joke. Her pulling off the door and he's Bugs Bunny imprinted into the concrete floor and like,
yeah, that was stuff's funny.
Like, that's, how is that not funny?
I mean, I think it's very telling, how better physical comedy remains funny, versus a lot of the comedy that we see coming out today, whether it be an Adam Sandler film, or a lot of like the two shot over the shoulder type of comedy where it's just dialogue back and forth. I don't think that is going to hold up as long.
I agree with you, only because like physical comedy and stuff like that, you know, clowns and performers in general, like that was done, you know, on stage, or it was done in film where there was no sound, like, you know, Charlie Chaplin and what was the last silent film that we did?
I mean, the only
silent film. The only silent film that we did was that. Come on. Designed for Living? No, that wasn't Designed for Living.
Safety Last.
Yes, Safety Last. Thank you. Yeah. Anyways, like that all has to be physical comedy only because they couldn't talk. But like now we're in, you know, 1960, we're in the 60s, and we still have performers that can do that and learn from those people, but also can do the newer form of acting or like the non-stage form of acting. And I don't know. It's, I think you're right though. Like physical comedy, anybody can enjoy it if it's done correctly, because the fear of the clock tower scene in Safety Last, like that was set up so well that anybody in any culture could look at that and be like, holy shit, that's scary. That looks real, you know? And that's funny.
Oh, yeah. And I think it took a long time for like that clock scene for people to realize how it was done. I mean, it was forever thought to be he really did that because
it looks like it.
You know, it looks like it. The camera is saying that it did. I'm seeing it with my eyes. So I thought the physical comedy in this was great. His parents, the professor's parents, I thought were very funny. Because the dad was very much like Professor Kelp, where he was very timid and he was being, you know, overruled and dominated by the mother character. But then he tries the tonic as well, and it flipped the script to what I thought was a funny shift.
Yeah, I mean, my, I don't know, I guess, sorry, I'm trying to think. I don't know, I felt it was more, I don't know, I felt like it was a little lazy just blaming the mother and the father. Well, the father was super timid, but it was because the wife was, like, a stereotypical, mean, nagging wife.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, it's the 60s, fine, get away with it. I didn't necessarily wouldn't do it that way today. But, like, digging into the character, like, and that's what they did in the remake. They expanded on the family aspect a little bit in that first movie, and then everybody loved the farting, so they made a second movie.
Almost everybody loved the farting. Jerry Lewis did not care for the remake because of the farting.
Yeah, well, Jerry Lewis, you're dead now, and farts are always going to be funny. Sorry, no offense.
I think two may. Well, anyway, we'll get it. If that one's on the list, we'll talk about it then. We won't talk about it here. And one other person I want to bring up that was in this that I had neglected to point out before. So we pointed out that Jaws, the Bond villain, is in this film.
See.
And we pointed out Henry Gibson. Also, from the first Spider-Man movie, the original Uncle Ben is in this film, Cliff Robertson.
Oh, boy.
I know. So amazing. Ooh. So amazing.
I'm sweating. I'm turned on.
Well, you know, it is Uncle Ben, and, you know, he knows with great power something. I forget the rest of it, but...
With great power comes more power, because power is power.
Power begets power?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. So what are some things you didn't like about this film? If there was anything, because, you know, let's be fair, maybe this was the perfect film for you.
Just the way the female characters were written, just as objects of desire. Purdy's a little bit more fleshed out, but not to my expectation for something that would be made today. But again, I can't fault something. I can only point it out. But yeah, and like, I don't know. Like, again, with the mother, like, she's the bad guy, and in the end, she's subservient to the man. Like, it should be. And it's, again, well, I could be reading too much into it, but I have to point it out.
I think one thing we've seen with any Jerry Lewis film is that Jerry Lewis is going to be the center of the film. Like, everything's going to be focused on him. You know, when we were talking about characters, we could really only name two characters that really stood out that deserved to be talked about. This isn't, you know, and if you look at The Ladies' Man, it was a similar thing. There was him, and then a bunch of ladies that lived in that house. And one of our criticisms of that film was that nobody else stood out. None of the female characters stood out at all. And I would say that this is similar. I think the fact that Stella Purdy is the basically only female that's in this film, with more than like two lines, says something similar to that. But then again, if you think about it, you have Jerry Lewis, you have the Dean, and then you have Stella Purdy. There's nobody else with any major lines in this film. That's it.
I will point out, too, there were no people of color in this movie. None. Like, a sea of white people with blonde hair. As far as the college campus could see.
Well, that and some very elderly or old football players. So the college students in here, they all looked older than Jerry Lewis.
Yeah.
Dressed up as Professor Kelp. Like Purdy was the only one that looked like she could be of age, of a college age. Everyone else looked like they're in their 30s and 40s. And it wasn't even like close. It wasn't even like a 90210 situation where you know they're older, but they look like they could pull it off. Like, there is no way that most of the guys that were in that classroom were not pushing 40, if not older.
Can I also point out that every time they did the establishing shot of the building the professor worked in, it just said science.
Yes.
It didn't say, like, you know, USC Department of Science and Tech. You know what I mean? It just said science.
Well, it's like most universities now don't have just one building on science.
Yes.
They'll have breakdowns of science all across campus. Yeah. So there are some, there are definitely some things that were either...
That's definitely a nitpick, but still.
Yeah, well, it's a nitpick, but still, it's something to point out. As, you know, I think a sign of the times, B, I don't know a lot about the history of working with Jerry Lewis, and maybe the next film, one of us can do a little research on that. I do know that he and Dean Martin had a pretty serious fallout where they weren't really digging each other or wanting to work with each other anymore, and that's why those movies ended. So I don't know if Jerry Lewis is kind of, you know, and I'm bringing this up because I don't know if his writing technique, if he's like, this is how we're doing it, it's this, this is funny, this works, and not really listening to that outside stuff of, hey, we could use, you know, let's add some people, a person of color here, or let's, you know, build up this female role or whatever. So I don't know enough to really say what it was like to work with him. I don't know if you have anything.
No, I mean, I tried to do some light racism research on him when I watched the movie last week, but not that I'm saying he's racist. It's just I'm always interested, especially like Jerry Lewis wasn't part of the Rat Pack, right?
No, he wasn't. He was, I'm not sure if he didn't get along with Frank Sinatra or something like that as well. So, he just had made a lot of films with Dean Martin.
Gotcha.
Martin and Lewis did a lot of films together.
Well, I mean, he definitely can direct. Like, that's something I've never been able to do, is direct myself. Takes a lot of work and a lot of, and it, like, he's doing funny and smart things. Yeah, I guess I have nothing majorly to complain about, but again, yeah, when we come up on his next film, we should probably dive deeper into the mind of Jerry Glavin Lewis.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if we have any of the movies with Dean Martin on the list as well. So we'll have to see. We have a lot of movies to go, and I know that we have not seen all of these movies.
We do know that frickin' The Burbs isn't on this list.
That is true. That is true. I know. This might be a Tom Hanks free list.
That is bullshit.
Oh, no, Philadelphia's on here. We're good.
Perfect, thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's not really on
there. No, it'd be a big bummer if it wasn't. That's the number one movie, Philadelphia.
Yeah. All right, so now with some of these criticisms, if you were to have this script.
Yes.
And I know it was just remade like in the 90s with Eddie Murphy did it. Made some changes. There are a few people of color in the film now. I mean, they're all played by Eddie Murphy, but they're there. Do you feel like okay?
I already know what I'm going to say.
Then say it. Well, let me say, could this be remade today? Same script?
Yes. Just flip the genders. And make Kelp a woman, and don't make you call her like Missy Love or something, but don't make her as hypersexualized. Just make her, you know, a good performer and super smart and confident. That's all you need to do. Like a woman that doesn't give a shit. That's how I would do it.
All right, my one question: How old was Professor Kelp? Like if you were to guess, because I don't think there's any like age given of him or anything, but if you were to guess the age
I
of
see,
Professor
I see what
Kelp,
you get at.
Yeah.
Alright, so the one of the changes, because I probably wouldn't be able to sell just that script, but maybe make it like a grad student, somebody that's working on their thesis, instead of it being an actual professor. Or you do what the Eddie Murphy movie did, and Miss Purdy was, wasn't she like a school administrator?
I think yeah, so. I don't think it was one of his students.
Yeah, so I guess you couldn't call it the Nutty Professor if they're in grad school. So yeah, that's what I would do.
You have to be a professor in order to
get the moniker Nutty Professor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Nutty Grad Student just doesn't have the same appeal, I don't think. That'd be one criticism. Like, it seemed kind of weird. So, I mean, he would be like a pushing 40-ish professor.
He was totally in his 40s.
And wanting to, you know, being attracted to a 20-year-old college undergrad. You know, I just think it's, you know, it was something that maybe at the time was a little bit more accepted or not considered as weird.
Baby,
to have that big
baby boomers, man.
I don't know. I don't know, but it definitely didn't. It definitely felt a little uncomfortable on my end, anyway.
Yeah. We probably should have brought that up earlier. Things that felt weird. Now I feel weird for not bringing it up.
Yeah, and pitching this movie as now a cougar hunting a young college.
No,
student.
It doesn't have to be. Just
so yeah, that was your pitch. That was your pitch.
Yeah. Well, I'm rescinding my pitch, and I'm
40-year-old professor. Hitting on becoming Rebecca Love.
Rebecca Love.
And going after. Yeah. Yeah, we all heard.
Will his name be Mr. Handsome?
Well, yeah.
Henry Handsome? Yep.
Stellar Handsome.
Stellar Handsome. Yep. Stellar Abdomen.
Yep. And he'll be Swedish. Or Australian. He'll be played by... one of the brothers, one of the good-looking brothers, like Thor or something, and the Hemsworth.
Oh, okay.
One of the Hemsworth brother. Oh, that'll be him.
Not Billy Baldwin.
No, not those brothers. Come on, get with it. Get with the times. The brothers now. We're talking about Hemsworth.
Sorry. How much is your Hemsworth?
$5. Thank you. Wow,
it's a good deal.
All right. Any other fun? So, what I'm saying is, as it is today, even if you flip the roles, I don't think this film could be made. I think that what we talked about before, the genders are too stereotyped to really work. The bully and nerd world has changed as well. So I thought one of the most unbelievable things in here is the professor being bullied by his students, physically bullied. And that is what made him want to get strong.
All right. I'll agree that as is, the script can't be made, but I still think with a little finagling, you could totally.
You've already lost this case. It's fine. It's fine. We're moving on. We're moving on, Chad.
I hate you.
It's already been settled. Any final thoughts about the film, Chad? Specifically about the film.
Good, well-rounded cast. I wish they were used more instead of Jerry Lewis. Not that he was bad. But, I don't know, he had a... It was a lot of him. And, I don't know.
Yeah, I like I said before, it's you have him and everybody else is just everybody else.
Yeah.
Even Stella Purdy, she's just a whatever because you didn't necessarily because he was more motivated by being bullied than he was getting Stella. You know, those are kind of equal motivations for him. One final thought I had. So my mom was in town visiting when I watched this, and so she joined. She had never seen it in color before because she had only seen it on TV. And when it was played in the 60s, only black and white televisions were there, so she didn't know how vibrant and colorful this film was. She actually thought that it was colored like post.
Oh, yeah, the...
The Ted Turner...
Yeah, we're gonna make it look good.
So the fact that she had never seen it in color and was kind of like, holy cow, this is a pretty film color wise, and it was. I will agree. I thought that was interesting. You know, and it's, again, one of those things I never thought of. How many of these movies that were out in color in the theaters did people never ever see in color? And just as somebody who has made films, and you do, just, like, not having to worry about that thought nowadays, right?
Yeah, just...
Like, like you had to, that had to be consideration, is any post, because there wasn't, you know, there wasn't any rental then. People were either going to see the movie in the theaters or on television. That's it. There's no other place someone can see a film. There wasn't a place to get a film. You couldn't. There wasn't any rental shop. There wasn't anything like that. So
no Blockbuster, really, people.
No Blockbuster. You really had to make it adaptable for both formats. So I thought that was interesting and kind of got me on a tangent, I guess.
No, that's... And you got to spend time with your mother, which is adorable.
You know what? It was nice. She was helping with the kids, so... Always appreciate it. Always appreciate it. So our next film, as that wraps this up...
Oh, I'm excited for this one.
...is the 1988 film, the O.J. Simpson film, The Naked Gun, from the files of Police Squad.
Wait.
Back when everybody loved O.J. Simpson.
The Juice. Who's on Twitter now? Did you see that?
Yeah.
You wishing everybody a happy Father's Day?
I'm not gonna follow him. Not gonna. Anyway, it also stars Leslie Nielsen, the very lovely Priscilla Presley, and among others, George Kennedy, Weird Al Yankovic is in it. You know, it's a classic film.
Weird Al is in this one?
Yes, in this one.
Oh, okay.
And this will be our second Zucker Brothers Abrams film as well. So they're coming up again, because we also had Top Secret from them.
See.
And so this is our second film. I believe we will have at least one or two more from them.
Airplane definitely has to be
on somewhere
here
on this list.
And yeah. Basketball.
Not.
Oh, I love basketball.
So, I know you do. So that is our next film, which, by the way, is number 72. Can you believe that, Chad?
72.
72.
I was.
Yep.
I was still in Vietnam.
I don't have anything to say to that.
12 years before I was born.
Yeah. You know what else, Chad?
I was going to say, there's one thing you could say to me.
Lord loves a working man. Don't trust Whitey.
Sure.
See a doctor and...
Get rid of it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to us. We like you.
Like you.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hat Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthat.net.